Some people are only ever going to get so strong, but there's no real limit to how smart you can get. You, as long as you keep applying and you keep learning and doing and being pretty conscious about trying to add things and add things into your game, then you always keep rising.
Thank you for tuning in to the Perth Reconnect podcast. We're in the Beyond Rest Chill Out space. I'm your host, Ben Dunnan. With me is my co-host, Josh Kennedy, two-time Coleman medalist and superstar for the Eagles. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. You?
Yeah, always good. Thank you for asking. Yeah. Always better now that you're here. And our special guest today is Jack Becker, professional MMA fighter and arguably the best pound-for-pound fighter we have in WA today. Thanks for being on board today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Our pleasure. So you've got a record of 9-2 now. It's been a very interesting career for you at 25 years young. How have you found the last 12 months with, if you don't mind me bringing up, two defeats when you were 9-0 before that?
I guess it's a tough one because you want to keep that record as clean as you can, but the last two fights I didn't win. I'm still, like, I know for a fact that I can fight better than I could before that. So I put in a lot of work for those fights. Two title shots. The first one was Australian title against probably the best, or he was at the time number one in Australia. And I was doing pretty well until I wasn't. So I was doing all right, and then I lost that one. And then after losing that, basically I lost that on the feet, so like a striking issue. I guess part of my ego is a little bit like, I had to fix that problem. And then the next fight, I wanted to fight a striker. And then I picked a striker out and I fought for another title and I didn't win. But in saying that, like the first one I lost by TKO. And then the second in Japan was a good striker, but it went five rounds. So,
yeah. Is that the biggest thing? Like, you know, because you won all your fights and then you obviously lost a couple. But yeah. Did you learn a lot from them? Because,
yeah.
You know, if you keep winning, like, which is good for your record and stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah, definitely.
I don't know. Is it not a reality check, but it's good to lose because then you know what's expected.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do, yeah. I think I just got so used. Like, obviously, like, when you first start, there's big gaps in everyone's games. Like, some people will be real good at some things and then shocking at others. But then as you go up and up and up, people will be really good at something and still pretty good at other things. And that was kind of what let me down. I knew that the guy was a good jiu-jitsu player, and I thought his striking was okay, but his striking was really good, and I was ended up being better on the floor, but then he finished me standing. So yeah, I guess.
And was that the fight in Japan?
That was the Hex Australian title.
Yeah. But recently you just fought in Japan.
So just fought in Japan, and that was against another title holder. And that went five rounds, so it went five fives.
Yeah. Rumour has it that the fight you had in Melbourne last November, if you won that fight, allegedly, you might have got a UFC contract. Is there any truth to that?
There's no fact to it. I suppose it would have put me in a good position to have an argument for it, but I had been approached by someone who was like a scout, just saying, keep doing what you're doing and we'll keep our eye on you. But that was it. There was no win this and you will take this step or anything like that. It was just, we've got our eye on you, so keep going how you've been, and good things will sort of eventually happen. That's basically all I got told.
Do you get feedback from, like, those type of guys who are up there in the UFC and all that, or is it more just your mentors around you that help you get through on, you know, what you need to lift in your game or what you're good at and your strengths and your weaknesses, or
as in like feedback from the scouts
from, yeah, from your fights and stuff, or
no,
is it
not really? No, it's sort of every man for himself until they make it in. It's like it's you and your team, you got to put everything together. However your result is, you got to kind of come back and reassess it yourselves.
Yeah, when you say every man for himself, I mean, what makes someone like you, you know, you're a very unassuming, very humble, articulate man. What possesses you to choose this life of a fighter? There's not a lot of money at the start and you've really got to apply yourself. What do you get out of this? What's the gratification? What are you trying to achieve?
I don't know. I guess it's addictive. I played rugby for a while, and I've always been a person that just was kind of motivated by sport and moving around. So I played rugby for ages, and then I tried juggling training MMA and then playing rugby, and it didn't work out. It was just too difficult. And then I just kind of, the transition from rugby to jiu-jitsu felt semi-natural, just like tackling people, being in like a contact situation. It wasn't that surprising to me. And then it just gets addictive. Like you learn a little bit, and then it just, even now, like it surprises me how much there is to learn. Like you think after a couple of years you'll know it all, but it's just infinite amount that you need to sort of get a hold on. You just kind of keep working at it, chipping away. And I got a really long way to go, but I've also come a long way as well. So
you're brown belt now.
Yeah.
So how long have you been working at jiu-jitsu or playing jiu-jitsu for to get to brown belt?
I started in 2009. So this would be the ninth year.
Yeah, that's impressive. And yeah, Josh and I were talking about this before, about how it's like a chess game, and there's just so much to it. And I was hearing a story about how a parent actually put his son into jiu-jitsu to help him with his grades at school, because as soon as he did that, all of a sudden his grades started lifting, which was amazing. Do you find that in your personal life, in different facets or aspects of your life?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to directly apply it, I guess, but I mean, like patience is a big thing. And then just kind of applying attention. Like I've always kind of struggled with that. I still do. Applying attention to one thing is like, it's hard enough as it is. And then when you have somebody trying to choke you at the same time, if you make a mistake, you get choked, you get hurt. Yeah. You take that away and then everything seems a lot easier. Like if you're doing a test, no one's going to choke you. No one's going to break your arm if you get an answer wrong. So it kind of, I guess you kind of go from being so concentrated with the threat of those sort of ideas to kind of taking it away. And then if you use that sort of focus in a different scenario, you can sort of see the difference.
So that mental side that you talk about, like I know with football, when I was younger, you just, you know, want to get big and strong. And, you know, that's all, like I really applied myself to the sport. And you build your skills up and all that stuff, but you don't really realize how much of a mental game sport is in any sport. Until you get a little bit older, like was there a point where you kind of realize like what you're doing, you know, you've got your strength, you're getting your skill up, but the mental side, when you started really focusing on that side of it?
Yeah, definitely. I sort of figured that, I guess in the beginning, I guess it's an old school mentality of when you're training and when you want to be a fighter, it's just every day has to just be like in crazy hard training. You just have to kill yourself every day. But if you do that, it kind of cuts off how much you're learning. I think if you go in every day and you just go as hard as you can, it's kind of difficult to learn. And then as I'm getting older now, I sort of realize that you can go in and someone can work as hard as they want. Like someone that can be so strong and physically able can be working against me. But if I'm moving the right way at the right time, it doesn't mean anything. Like what they're doing with all of that strength and enthusiasm, or what would the word be? Like so much like... I'm trying to think of a word, but it's not coming. But basically, like you can use technique to nullify strength and explosiveness. Yeah. So you can be as explosive and smart and athletic as you want, but if somebody moves more efficiently than you do, you don't last very long. So that's kind of what I'm realizing now. It's like you can always be strong and fit, but if somebody is more efficient and somebody, I guess some people are only ever going to get so strong, but there's no real limit to how smart you can get. You, as long as you keep applying and you keep learning and doing and being pretty conscious about trying to add things into your game, then you always keep rising. Whereas you can only get so fit and so strong, really. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
So a lot of it's like intention based as well.
Yeah.
What drives you, what motivates you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And where do you want to take this? I mean, in my opinion, if I was in your shoes and I got punched really hard in the head and all the blood was rushing through my skull, I'd probably go, why am I here? Do you ever find yourself in that situation?
No, honestly, no. The worst thing that can ever happen in a fight is just basically not being efficient. You just run out of energy and you're absolutely dead. You don't want to give up, but you've got nothing left. So that's hell. I'd rather get kicked in the face 1,000 times than be exhausted and really, really not want to lose. But I'm too tired to really do anything correctly, which is why I guess it comes into being efficient, still being strong and fit, but also using energy wisely.
So naturally you want to be the number one in the world, hold a belt up. That's natural. That's understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you want to go with this? There is only so long you can fight in the cage for.
Yeah.
What are you looking to do outside of this?
I suppose right now, like, I enjoy little bits of teaching and little bits of kind of helping other fighters out, but that's not really what I want to do for a while. I don't want to own a gym until way down in the track. I feel like I'm always been the type of person that wants to really have like a background behind them. I want people to look like and say that guy's achieved a lot. I want to train with him because of that. Not that guy is real friendly and he's okay. Like, I enjoy teaching in bits and pieces, but I don't want to be a coach until I'm done being an athlete. So it's good because I learn little bits and pieces as I'm teaching, but I don't. That's not my goal. My goal is to kind of apply it all to getting as far as I can professionally as an athlete. And then when I can't physically do that anymore, then I'd rather sort of
reassess things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're just focusing on the now. Right now, you're in the peak of your career. You're in your element. You're only 25 years old.
Yeah.
You've got a bright future ahead of you. So that's what you're focusing on right now. Just one fight at a time.
Yep, that's it.
And how do you find that, Josh, being a pro? About to call you a pro fighter, like being a professional athlete. being a pro athlete. I mean, you've achieved amazing things with your career. You're a big superstar. How do you face the reality of knowing that someday all this glory is going to come to an end? I mean, what do you have, an end game? Do you have an exit strategy? Yeah. How do you focus on the future?
It's a pretty tough one because obviously, you know, a lot of our stuff's just built on performance and, you know, contract wise, you know, if you're playing well, you get another contract and all that stuff. So you don't really know when it's got to end because I think the average the life cycle of an AFL footballer is 3 years. So it's a big turnover game. So I think, you know, for me, transitioning now, I'm 31. I've got to think about life after football, and not many players, you know, play till they're over 30. So I'm just trying to find out things that I love. And you talk about that passion and why people do stuff. It's been hard to try and find something that that I really love that I could do as a job one day. So I've been trying a lot of things. One of the big things that I really want to do is be able to bring people up to my hometown, Northampton, Horrocks Beach, because it's such a beautiful place. It's up in the Midwest. And so I've been looking at avenues to help try and promote that area. And that's something that I'd like to get in one day, camping, fishing. I love being outdoors. So there's those little things. But, you know, you're trying to think about that, but then also stay, like you said, in the moment, because we're playing football now. And, you know, you want to prolong your career as long as you can. So getting the best out of yourself and trying to keep that performance up to a level where, you know, you will get another year contract. Do you find that hard, I suppose, a bit mentally, because you're training so hard for a fight that you don't know when he's going to be and who, you know, I know we play every week, so you know who you're going to play against, you know your opponent, you know everything about him, you can prepare for it, and just it's what you do every week. Do you find that hard? Because I find definitely. That really challenging being... Yeah. Yeah, where it's just training for, I don't know who it's going to be and what I need to work on or what I need to,
Yeah, no, it does for sure. I think in the beginning it was kind of like when in your first couple of fights, you don't know, like you can't, like there's not really footage on anyone, but then now you like, it's up to you to sort of, that's why you want to, I'd like to know a name, like even if it's like when I fought for the title, like I knew who that was months before. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I knew a lot about him, but then now it was like it got to about 4 weeks out and I was just like, that's not enough time to prepare. Yeah. Especially because every now and then, I'm not saying this would be from this promoter, but some promoters will give another guy a hint. They'll say, okay, this is going to happen. This guy's keen. And then they won't tell you for a couple of weeks. Because they want to kind of give someone a little bit of an edge maybe.
Yep.
I think that definitely happens, but... Yeah. I just would rather know further out. It's just more easier to motivate yourself when you have a name, when you have a date and it's locked in, rather than just keep training really hard. Because what can happen is you can train really, really hard. Like a fight camp intensity is not something like, I think if you tried to hold that for over 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, depending on if it's a 3-round fight or a 5-round fight. If you tried to hold that the whole year round, you're either not training hard enough or you're going to get really injured and worn out. So it's that 6 weeks that you're going to kind of build up and then sort of taper down that last week. Whereas I was kind of building up, and then I was kind of got to a point where I was like, I need to know within the next couple of days, because what happens if you just keep going for the hell of it, you don't fight, and then there's another fight that pops up right after? You can't just keep going up and up and up and up, because then you get to the fight and you're absolutely wrecked.
Well, you're talking about injuries there. I mean, psychologically, how tough is it when you have an injury? I mean, Josh, you can relate to this because you've just come off an injury. Mm. What do you guys go through when you've hit that barrier? I mean, I assume you've had injuries that have stopped you from fighting in the past, Jack.
Yeah. I think if it's bad enough, it really depends. Like, I don't think I've ever gone into a fight without some sort of... I think you're always carrying an injury. Like, you always got something that's niggling. But I mean, I've never had an injury that I can think of that stopped me from fighting.
Yeah, right.
But I think if it was something like an ACL injury or something like that, that's for the long term, I probably wouldn't risk that. But when it's like muscle strains or things like that, bits and pieces. Mm. There's just injury management that kind of, you can sort of train around it. Like, you can always do something. Like, you can always kind of, the last fight that I had, what was it? There's a couple things. Actually, I had anemia. So I a couple of weeks out, I got anemia, and I was, I just couldn't train hard. So I got really frustrated. I tried to train hard and I just felt lightheaded and sick all the time. So I was like, while I knew I needed to get my iron up, I was just like trying my best to study. I just try to be smarter, really. I'd spend like a week, rather than doing fitness and stuff that I wouldn't really get much out of because I couldn't really go crazy hard, I was just trying to write things down and remember certain positions and write different, so it comes back to knowing your opponent. I knew what he did, so I would sort of like write down different ideas of if this is his game plan, if he does this, if he does this, if he does this. That was sort of what I was trying to do while I was kind of coasting. And then when I felt better, it was a bit closer to the fight and I could keep training.
So you've never sort of been in the position yet where you've actually had a major injury that would affect, you know, like Anderson Silva styles where he snapped his leg kind of thing?
Nah, nothing like that.
Not that we want to, we don't want that to ever happen. Yeah, touch wood.
Not that I can think of. I've had something that had that I couldn't fight while I had it, but it wasn't in a fight camp. I dislocated my big toe a couple of times, and it was just the most irritating injury because every time I tried to push forward off a to punch or to sprawl or to do a takedown, my toe would just pop out. Ugh. So eventually, there's only so many times you can tape it until the tape didn't do anything. So I had to get surgery, and now it's fine.
It's a bit
like limited range of movement, but
so far you've been pretty lucky in that respect, then.
Yeah, no, a couple of broken bones and cuts and things, but nothing. Nothing too bad, to be honest.
Have you found things personally, Josh?
Yeah, well, like Dick was saying, like when you get an injury, you're realizing whatever that injury is, you can still work around other stuff. So obviously, you know, getting a bit crooked there and you can't train as hard, you start to work on your technique, and which is something I didn't realize probably till I was a bit older. You know, you have an injury, you know, and then you just shut your body completely down. Like you'd hurt your knee or you'd hurt your ankle, and then you couldn't run for a week and a half. So you'd actually, I used to just do nothing. Whereas, like, you can still use your arms, you still use your other leg, you can still do some other strength stuff, which is something I didn't really learn until I was a little bit older. So I think once I found that, you didn't dwell on things too much. You kind of knew your plan. This is how long it's going to take. This is when I can start doing stuff. I do all this other stuff around it. I reckon it helps you get through a bit of rehab type stuff. And I've had a few long-term injury stuff, but not like some of the other blokes. And, you know, being able to just... constantly go through rehab, you know, it's a pretty lonely place. Even though we're playing a team sport, like you're kind of by yourself doing your own thing, you're all different times to the other boys, it can get mentally draining. But I think as you get older, you kind of realize having a plan in place, knowing that you're going to come back, you get through it a lot easier. But I think early on you struggled with injuries because you thought it was the end of the world and all that stuff, but it wasn't until I realized you can do other things, you kind of it's so simple. But yeah, at the time, you're just ingrained in your head on, I've got this injury, I can't play for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, oh no, I'm out, and you dwell on it. Whereas you have that different mindset approach, yeah, you get through it a lot better.
Yeah, I guess I just think of someone like Nick Natanui. Obviously, you don't want to comment too much on it, but you know, he's a great example of someone who's an amazing athlete who does amazing things, and he's just had bad luck several times around, and just everyone's heart goes out to him because psychologically, I assume he'd be going through a lot of issues.
Yeah, we have 18 months off. You come back, you start playing. You're still a little bit sore from what happened. And then, you know, you play 8 or 9, 10 games and then you do it again. And, you know, you're out for another 12 months and you know what's expected. You know what you've been through. Yeah, so it is quite challenging. And that's the nature of sport, I suppose. It's being able to go through adversity. And that's one thing I think sport has helped me with is dealing with adversity at times, which I reckon, you know, will help you down the track in life, because life's so busy, life is so stressful, and you know, it is hard sometimes, and you have to deal with that adversity. And I think sport has given me that I suppose little bit of education on it to hopefully help with a lot of things that will pop up in life that do.
Yeah, it's just another chapter in your life.
Yeah.
And what sort of mindfulness tools have you used to help you through your career? I mean, like meditation, anything like that?
Yeah, so this year as a group, as a team, we've been doing a lot of mindfulness stuff, which has been fantastic. You know, we do it before meetings, before games and all that, which has been great. And a lot of guys have done individual stuff, and I've been floating for the last, what has it been now, 4 years, I think, now, and that's just not through life. I'm actually floating in the tank, so it's and that's been a kind of a cheat way to meditate. My head has always been so busy, and life is busy. You know, you either have your kids or your work or whatever you're doing, your passion. It's so fast paced out there that you never have time to yourself. And I'd always try and meditate, but I could just never do it. And I think floating's helped me, I suppose, because you're in there, you've got no sound, you don't feel anything, there's no light, there's no distractions besides your own head.
Yeah.
And I suppose that first year trying to work out, you know, how to calm yourself in your own head. And I think that's really helped with now doing meditation and mindfulness outside, which has been good. So I've been lucky to be able to, I suppose, find that floating experience that's helped with it. But yeah, we do a fair bit of that this year, which I think's been great, and a lot of sporting clubs are doing it now, and teams are realizing that the mental side of it is a big thing in all sports, no matter what you play. The mental side of it is massive.
And that's applicable to all facets of your life. I've found that when I'm meditating or I'm utilizing all my tools, or something as simple as training and keeping fit, you know, that release of endorphins, I feel in a much better state of mind. And I'm just, you know, I'm so much better from doing these sort of things because I'm more tolerable amongst my staff members. And also I'm a lot better with my kids. I find when I'm in the zone that my children are a lot more receptive to me, and I can negotiate and reason with them a lot better. As opposed to if I'm not on top of my game, I'm not meditating, I'm not floating, I'm not training, then I'm a lot snappier and I'm not receiving the appropriate feedback. So yeah, it's just every little tool you use in your life. So moving on, Jack, if you're what's the average fight you're gonna look to have a year? Is it 2 fights a year?
It's hard. Like, ideally I'd like to have like 3 or so. Like, I want to get more, but it's not always that easy. Sometimes timing doesn't work out. I'd say for me, it's probably been about 2 a year.
Yeah.
And
can you see yourself, like, years from now, what's the most you would have wanted to achieve? I mean, something that's aligned to your personal values if you're on your deathbed. I know that's like, we don't want to think about you going out and getting hit by a bus right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you were to sort of be on your deathbed, is there something that you'd want to have achieved?
Yeah, I want to fight in the UFC. It's right now, that's the, I know it's not the be all and all of the sport, but it is the biggest promotion in the world. It's the most well broadcasted as well.
Yep.
That's the place to be, I suppose, for an MMA fighter. You want to get to the biggest promotion in the world. So that's the plan. Like, and then anything from there, anything on the way to there, is there's Bellator, there's some other big promotions. Like, I'd like to fight on them as well. But ideally, I want to sort of, I want to get a fight against some people who are ranked really highly in the world, not just Australia.
Yeah, I've seen the Bellator competition. That's actually pretty good. I know, is it Zappa? They bought out Strikeforce. Is Strikeforce still around?
No.
No, no. It just got taken over by UFC.
Taken over by someone.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah,
Bellator's got some really good competition. There's some guys in that competition and a lot of competitions around the world, I think, that have chosen not to fight in the UFC because it's not really their goal. Like, I think there's some Russian promotions that have some absolute animals that are probably getting paid better fighting on those shows and maybe in Bellator than they would in UFC, or they don't like the contracts in UFC, or maybe they don't like the staff, I'm not sure. But for me, I guess the UFC is my goal right now. It's the biggest promotion and sort of what I'm looking at.
Yeah, the prestige and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So I guess knowing the biggest regret of the dying in the context of that statement, how do you see yourself living right now? I mean, do you feel like you're true to yourself? Are they reflecting to your deepest values, or are you living a life that you feel is most acceptable to others around you?
No, I'm living life that I want, I'm happy. So I guess everyone's been through stages when they're not happy, but no, I am. So as far as I'm concerned, if I can keep doing what I'm doing now and it keeps me happy, I can do that for as long as I really need. That's my goal, just kind of stay happy and enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
And if you can do that until you die, I guess you're going to die happy.
Yeah, true.
You might not have heaps of money. You might not be really, really well off, but I guess there's people that are really well off that aren't happy. So I know which one I'd rather have.
Yeah, be rich in spirit, man. I hear you. So you're living your purpose. You really sort of, you know what your direction, your goal is. A lot of people don't have a clue. Like, I'm 36 and I know people in their 40s and 50s and they still have no idea what their purpose, why they're here, what they're about. So you know why you're here and what you got to achieve.
Yeah, I think I see a lot of people, I know what I don't want. I see a lot of people working like a 9-to-5 and a job that they're kind of grinding, they don't like it, but they're doing it because there's an end goal where they're going to be happy, whereas it doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you can do something that's moving forward, that's keeping you happy, I feel like that's better than waiting until a point where you've finally got enough money to then start getting ready to try and be happy. So to me, that doesn't make any sense. If you don't enjoy your work, then I think it's probably something that you need to sort out. But
yeah, definitely. That's a big problem. I notice a lot of people, like, they're procrastinating in their spare time and so forth. And you can only really appreciate procrastination if you've absolutely worked your ass off all week long, where you feel like you've deserved this little reward of sitting on the couch and flicking on the idiot box or something, which should never really be the case, because I notice whenever I'm turning on the TV and watching a Netflix series, which I'm guilty of, I kind of feel guilty about it. I'm like, I could be using my time better. I could be at the gym training right now, like I wasn't there on Monday morning. I talked myself out of that. You could be, reading a book, or you could be drawing or writing down your memoirs. There's so much you can do with your time. And if you're feeling guilty, then you're obviously not utilizing your time to the best of your abilities. Does that make sense?
It does, but it's also, I think it's probably a good way to have your brain wired, because if you are being productive in the week and you still feel guilty about sitting down and watching TV for a bit, that's much better than watching TV all week and then feeling maybe not even that guilty. I mean, if your brain's telling you, like, do more, that's what you want. Like, you should feel guilty. Same as if you took a day off training. It's good if you feel guilty, because you're going to go back. Whereas if you didn't feel guilty, you'd just be like, oh, that wasn't that bad. I might just not train again. And then you get sick, you get fat, you're just unhealthy. So I think having that little bit of your brain that says that's not enough, you shouldn't do this, is kind of your safety, I guess.
Well said. Actually, that's got me thinking about your diet. Do you, Josh and I were talking about it before, like cutting weight and so forth. Is that a big thing for you before a fight?
It used to be harder. Now I feel like I've got it down to a T. Like the last fight that I had, I was heavy, but I sort of kept track of it. As long as you're on top of and you don't just want look at the scale one day and it's a number that you don't recognize. If it's not close to where you should be, you're going to be in trouble. But I was just kind of tracking it. I knew where it was, so I knew how hard I was going to have to work to get it off. And the last weight cut was easy. I think I woke up in the morning and I probably had to cut maybe 1.3 kilos or something like that. So not much. And then I would have put on maybe 7 kilos the next day.
That's out of control, eh?
So for me, that was honestly really, really easy. I've done worse and I've done a little bit easier, but that was like ideal.
So what do you do, like putting that 7 kilos on? Are you talking about steak and water or something?
That's probably 7 kilos of water, to be honest. Yeah, and then a meal maybe after that.
Are we able to talk about your diet at all, Josh, or is that under wraps, mate?
No, it's all right. It's all about balance, I think.
Yeah, because you're what we call a conscious eater. So technically you're not a vegetarian, but you do stray towards that. And rumour has it you're forced to eat meat once a week or once a month. Do you want to shed some light on this?
No. I went vegetarian for a year just to give it a go and stuff. And just to see, you know, everyone spooked about it and all that stuff, and but yeah, like, and then from that I probably don't eat as much meat as I used to, but like my diet now is just all about balance and trying to make sure that you get enough in for the week to fuel you for training and playing, and trying to stick away from, oh, I've got a real sweet tooth, so chocolate and lollies is like my, like, I used to go to a servo, I'll fill up and I'll just get chocolate every time.
I got some white chocolate in the next room.
No, don't tell me that. So it's being able to, like, you know, cut down on that, because I could just eat a full block in one sitting, which is probably not good for the body. So, but yeah, like, it's all about balance, I think. And that's something that I used to be really strict on it early on in my career, and now I've been a bit more relaxed with it. And, you know, I used to cut the fat off the steak and wouldn't eat cheese and all these things, whereas now I eat anything, but it's just all in moderation, which I think is what diets are about. But we're lucky enough that my job is we've got to train every day. So sometimes you can eat, you know, some of those things that you shouldn't. But yeah, for a job, I have to be fit. So yeah. I'm quite lucky in that sense.
Do you find there's a weight that you need to stay at?
Yeah, so I've been about 105 the last probably 5-6 years. Yeah, it has been. But I was getting a bit older now, and I was playing I wouldn't come off. So I'd play every minute of every game for about 3 years at 105. And yeah, I think it did put a bit of stress on the body. And so now I'm getting towards that. You know, I've had a few injuries last year and this year, and we're trying to work on what the weight is now. So I think I'm going to try and get down to about 102, maybe 100, which I think will put less stress on the body, but still being able to keep the strength, because that's the biggest thing. And being a tall forward, I suppose you need to have some strength with contested marking and stuff. So it's trying to find that balance. But yeah, look, a lot of it sometimes you can cut through fat, but my skin folds are pretty good, so it has to come from a bit of muscle, and just got to make sure we maintain the strength. But yeah, a lot of guys, I used to fluctuate massively. I'd be like 100, and I'd go 105, and I'd be now 98, and I think that was just purely diet and hydration. Yeah, and then you start, like you said, you start to work it out, and you know what works for you. But yeah, if I can, so this year I'm about 103, so if I can hold that this final series, I'll be pretty happy, and then probably look to drop it. But
I know you don't have a nickname, Jack, but I've heard amongst your opponents that they call you the Beast.
The Beast? Who, me?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Or Jack?
No, you. You're called the Beast. No, you're called the Beast, man.
I've never heard Are you making up another one?
No.
I've never heard of that.
No. It was from a St Kilda player. He was floating at the Perth Centre, and he saw a photo of you, and he was just like, ah, the Beast.
He called me the Beast.
He called you the Beast.
Wow, I've never been called the Beast before. But
all right, well, it's.
But if that's what the circles outside of our club are saying, I'll keep it. Yeah, for sure.
It's a compliment. It's better than the ones I come up with.
Someone tried Donkey Kong on me.
Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
Why Donkey Kong?
Because one of my fights, I don't know what was going on. It's something I'd never trained. I took the guy down, and I was on top of him, and I was like hammer fisting, and then for like, to finish it, I was doing two-handed.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah, DK. So someone came up with Donkey Kong. So I was like, I'm the guy. So it's kind of funny. It just never really stuck.
You got some good prints for your shirts, I think. Yeah. Though, you know?
Yeah, And he goes, yeah, that's a keeper. We're talking about nicknames. And
so you don't have a nickname? No, you're nothing stuck yet?
No, not really. Like, people have just come up with different things, but
Jack the Ripper?
Yeah, I've heard that one before.
It just hasn't stuck?
Really?
Is it?
I feel like it might be taken.
Is it? Yeah, I assume
imagine,
it would be.
I imagine
yeah.
if there's a Jack, he's probably got it. Whoever's the first guy in the UFC or something like that.
No, so just claim it. No
just
way.
Claim it.
Yeah.
Jack the Shredder. I mean,
sure,
you got
I'm sure I could register it somewhere so they have to take it off him.
Yeah, all these trademark infringements popping up. Actually, I have to ask this on a side note before we finish up. What does it take to get that rig of a six-pack of yours, man? I've seen the photos and without...
You want to see it now?
I've seen the photos and I've felt it personally in a strictly platonical manner, man. You got a mean six pack there. Do you have to like cut out butter for that or something?
Do you want to know what it is? It's rocking up to training on Monday. That's what it is, mate.
Man, that's different. I've got a career outside of that.
Honestly, it's just like when I'm just training, I'm not in a camp. I'll kind of sit a bit heavier, and then every time I ever fight, like to me, there's. Some people can do it. I just don't see the point in carrying body fat into a fight. It's not going to help with my fight, I don't think. So basically when I get to my fight, my body fat is probably about 4% or something like that. So you take all that body fat out and you've been training and doing your strength training as well, and then you drain all the water out of you, yeah. It's going to make you look pretty cut.
All right.
That six pack turns into like a belly pretty fast after I've eaten. But
yeah, I understand. That's why I stick to the career of floating, man. And I just can't do what you can do.
Well,
Monday morning we'll
do some ads.
Yeah, dude. I owe that much to you. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on board today, Jack. I really appreciate your time. Cool. That's cool. And thank you, Josh. I really appreciate your time and your busy schedule. And
thank you.
I wish you all the best with your finals footy up until you play my beloved Richmond Tigers. Then it's a different story. But no, yeah, all jokes aside, you guys really deserve this premiership. So yeah, I'm sure you'll do well, mate.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. This is the Perth Reconnect podcast at Beyond Rest. Thank you.